An estimated 22 million people live with HIV in sub-Saharan Africa, and the epidemic has left nearly 12 million orphaned children. Research is ongoing to see if circumcising males is one way the disease might be limited. Major circumcision drives were planned after trials from Uganda, Kenya and South Africa in 2006 showed that circumcision could reduce a man's risk of acquiring HIV by half. But more recent results published in the Lancet Medical Journal suggest that circumcising men who already have HIV doesn't stop them passing on the virus to their female partners. In a moment, I'll be discussing some of the facts and myths surrounding male circumcision. But first, Kennedy Gondwe is a 29-year-old reporter from Zambia who took the decision to be circumcised 2 years ago. Unusually, Kennedy also decided to record the procedure he was undergoing.
Just have to get on the couch.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You lie on your back.
I'm going to start this procedure by doing the local anesthesia using lignocaine in a needle. I'm going to prick you just at the base of the penis.
Okay. You'll be okay. Don't even anticipate. No, that's fine. That's it. That's it. That's all the pain you'll feel. Just relax. Just relax. Don't move your feet. Don't tense up. Just relax. Okay.
What we are doing is... we are now we are closing the bleeders, the bleeding points. We are putting stitches.
Have you already cut?
Yes, so that's done. It's gone.
Okay.
Yeah, you didn't feel anything, did you?
No, I didn't.
But why are you looking worried?
Well, that was 2 years ago now, and Kennedy Gondwe joins me from Zambia. Not just unusual to record the procedure, Kennedy, but unusual in the first place for a man like you to decide to have the operation. Why?
I'm here.
Hello? Oh, have we got Kennedy?
I'm here.
Yes, Kennedy, we just had a little bit of problems with the beginning of that. I was just asking you that it's unusual for a man of your age in Zambia to have this procedure. Why is that? No. Kennedy seems to be able to hear us, but we can't hear him. So we're going to try and get him back. But in the meantime, let's leave Kennedy for the moment. If he comes back, all well and good. But let me introduce our other guests, who is Dr. John Warren, who's chairman of Norm UK, a voluntary organisation which runs support groups for men who've been circumcised, and Dr. Helen Weiss, who's reader in epidemiology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Let's talk a little bit about these trials that are happening in different parts of Africa, Helen. Previous trials did seem to show that circumcision could halve the risk of HIV infection for the man, but later trials that it didn't stop them passing on the virus to their female partners.
Yes, that's correct. So, as we've heard, there have been three randomised controlled trials where men who are uncircumcised but willing to be circumcised were enrolled, and they were followed for up to 2 years. And in each of the three trials, the men who were circumcised were at half the risk of acquiring HIV during the trial as the uncircumcised men. So actually each of the trials was stopped early because the results were so clear, and an independent data monitoring board in each case said it was unethical to carry on.
But that later trial, can I just get
sure.
clear? Men with HIV were then monitored sleeping with their partners just to see if circumcision alone offered any protection. That sounds quite dangerous.
So that was actually, that was part of the trial in Uganda, where men coming in were asked if they wanted to be tested for HIV. And the ones who were HIV positive were enrolled into a separate trial. And the idea behind that was to look at HIV acquisition in their female partners. So all the men were given careful condom provision, counselling, etc., but their female partners were also followed up, and there was no statistical difference in the HIV infection in the women, the female partners of the circumcised.
But difficult to know for sure, because there is some speculation that maybe the couples resumed their sex life before the wound was properly healed. So
that's
very,
right.
very difficult to get any reliable data.
Well, this is a problem, and the numbers were actually very small. That trial was also stopped early in this case because the numbers of couples enrolled was smaller than anticipated. So we actually have very little data on the direct impact of circumcision for women.
Well, just be patient with me a moment, John, because I think we've actually got Kennedy back on our line from Zambia. Hello, Kennedy.
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good. I am relieved to hear you. We've just been talking about some of these trials in Africa, Kennedy. Well, I just want to point out, you're not HIV positive. Why did you decide to be circumcised? And what reaction did you get from other people in Zambia?
To answer the first part of the question, I think I wanted to contribute to the discourse, the debate that has been going on concerning circumcision as it regards the fight against HIV. I realize, for instance, that 60% of the chances by a man who's been circumcised are that he will not get the virus that causes AIDS. And because of such a thing, and coming from a background where people don't want to talk about circumcision openly, it's considered as a taboo, much as it is a good thing when it comes to HIV. I thought, let me go for it, publicize it, and let people know that circumcision is actually good.
Kennedy. Kennedy, the line is not terribly good, but I'll persevere just for one more question because of the trouble you're going to there. What was your family's reaction? What was your girlfriend's reaction to having the procedure?
Before I decided to go for it, I consulted her. I consulted my family members, and they were all okay with it. I even told them that I'd go public after being circumcised, and they were okay. When I was doing the operation, I was actually with my girlfriend throughout, so she saw what was happening to me. I didn't even feel the foreskin being cut, but she was there when the foreskin was being cut, you see. And after that, I mean, the reaction was pretty much okay.
Okay.
But the only people that were against it, yes?
Yep.
The only people that were against it.
Thank you, Kennedy. You've explained there some of the stigma that you face. I'm afraid that the line, really, the quality is not clear enough to us to understand exactly the points that you're making there. But thank you very much, Kennedy Gondo, for joining us. And let me come back to Dr. Helen Weiss and Dr. John Warren. Dr. John Warren, you're chairman of Norm UK, a voluntary organisation which runs support groups for men who've been circumcised. What is your attitude? I mean, we're talking about Africa here, and the situation in Africa is very, very different to anywhere else in the world. It is a crisis of HIV. Now, you are against circumcision. Are you against it in any circumstances? Can you see the role it has to play in the battle against HIV?
Yes, I agree. The situation in Africa is very different from the situation in other parts of the world. And these studies which have been done in Africa cannot necessarily be applied elsewhere in the world where conditions are different. In Africa, in the trial conditions, they did show that circumcision of an adult male reduced his risk of being infected by 50%. And that would mean that, say, a man continues with his high-risk behaviour, instead of taking 1 year to get infected, he will take 2 years to get infected.
And so
this may slow the rate of progression. But there are other means of tackling the problem other than circumcision.
And is that one concern, that the perhaps the message that is coming out in Africa is that circumcision is giving total protection?
Yes, I'm very much afraid that men in Africa who get themselves circumcised in order to give them some protection against HIV will believe that they have 100% protection, and their partners may believe this, and they may continue with high-risk behaviour and not using condoms.
Is that message happening in
Well,
Africa,
obviously,
Helen?
That's a potential concern. So the researchers have been very careful to look at behaviour after circumcision, and there's absolutely no evidence that men are increasing their risky behaviour after being circumcised.
But what about access to condoms?
Well, when a man comes in wanting to be circumcised, he's given very careful counselling, explaining what it means, explaining it's only partial protection. It will halve his risk. It won't completely prevent him. So men are counselled to abstain from sex after the operation for a period of weeks, and then to use condoms consistently and correctly. And we like the female partner also to come in so we can explain to the couple together the need for safe sex after circumcision.
We've mentioned, John, that there is a lot of myths surrounding circumcision. What about the actual history of it? How long ago did it begin as a procedure?
Well, its origins are prehistoric, really. We don't know where... Well, we know it started in the Middle East, probably, around the Red Sea. And we don't really know why people started doing it. It certainly wasn't medical public health reasons, because modern ideas about medicine didn't exist then. It may have been partly sacrificial, and it could have been punitive. It could have been to identify an individual tribe and make them look different from the neighbouring tribe. Things like this, but we really don't know how it started.
And as for today, Helen, according to the World Health Organization, 30% of the global male population is circumcised. Now, we know it's popular practice amongst Jewish and Muslim faiths. I didn't realize that it's very common in America and more common in Australia than it is here.
That's right. About, I think about 60% of newborn boys now are circumcised in the United States. Even though it's not very common in Europe and in the UK.
And yet here it's only done for medical reasons on the NHS, John.
Yes, there's no medical advantage in routine neonatal circumcision, and I think it's harmful. And also it infringes the rights of the child, because we should consider whose penis is it. It doesn't belong to his parents. It doesn't belong to the National Health Service. It belongs to that child. It's his penis, and the foreskin is an integral part of the penis.
Dr. Helen Weiss, finally, though, if there are other health benefits of circumcision, the data on that is sketchy as well, but are there other health benefits for women?
There are. I'd just like to say one thing. I mean, ideally, yes, you'd want to wait till a man is an adult so he can make his own decision, but the procedure is a lot safer, less invasive, cheaper, less traumatic in an infant than an adult, and that's the reason that it is done neonatally as well. But in terms of health benefits to women, men in the trials, again, they showed that the circumcised men were less likely to get human papillomavirus, which is a virus that causes penile cancer in men and cervical cancer in women. So we would expect to see a lower risk of cervical cancer in women. And also, the trials again have shown a lower risk of vaginal infections in the partners of circumcised men.
But if we end on Africa, Helen, if this research shows that circumcision alone will not reduce the transmission of HIV alone, nor does it offer any protection for female partners, should the limited health funds be focused on circumcision? Shouldn't it be focused on more widely available condoms?
Well, I think one key point is that if it, we've got proven evidence that it reduces the risk in men. And if you think, where do women get infected from? They get infected from men. So anything that benefits men is going to indirectly protect women.
Okay, there we shall have to leave it. Dr. Helen Weiss and Dr. John Warren, thank you both very much indeed.